In 1975, Lieutenant Colonel Robert K. Brown, a retired Green Beret, launched the controversial magazine Soldier of Fortune, which is devoted to reporting on wars and conflicts around the world. With a camera in one hand and a gun in the other, Colonel Brown and his team have reported from some of the most dangerous places on the globe, from Afghanistan to El Salvador, and they've also participated in conflicts, training resistance movements, smuggling guns, and serving as advisors to foreign armies. In a memoir called I Am Soldier of Fortune, Dancing with Devils, Mr. Brown tells his story from his days in Vietnam to the controversy surrounding the Guns for Hire ads that ran in his magazine's classified section. The book is published by Casemate, and I'm very pleased that it brings Colonel Brown to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
You began your military career in 1950 by joining the ROTC program at Michigan State. Had you grown up in a military family?
No. Of course, my father had been in World War I, and of course, I had an uncle also in World War I, but I wouldn't call it a military family.
You spent your military career in the Army, but didn't you initially want to become a pilot in the Air Force?
Oh, that's why I joined the ROTC, the Air Force, and I had visions of being a pilot, but after a while, came to pass that I realized that I wasn't going to fly because of my bad eyes. So I decided to cast around and look for other options. Because, see, you understand, back in those days, you had no choice. You were going to go volunteer to go in the Army or you're going to be drafted. That was just the way it was back then.
And ROTC guaranteed that you would become an officer.
That's correct, yeah.
After you completed basic training in 54, you were assigned to an intelligence unit as a special agent during the height of the Cold War. Was that as exciting as it sounds?
No, it was boring. Very boring, because what we were doing primarily was running background investigations. Back then, keep in mind the times, back then you didn't have problems. Everybody was a good guy, except you'd find the odd pedophile or whatever. But you didn't have a problem. So it was just boring. Just Johnny Jones was a good guy and yuck.
But that was the time, well, that was the McCarthy era, and people were looking for communists under every bed.
Oh, absolutely. But we never found
any. And then you left active duty in 1957. Why?
Well,
on your tour of duty?
No, I came to the conclusion that there's no way I was going to make a career out of the Army because I do not suffer fools gladly. Not that I'm exceptionally bright or talented, but I'd be darned if I was going to be in a situation where I was going to have to work for incompetent people.
It was while you were pursuing your master's degree at the University of Colorado that you first became involved in the world of mercenaries and revolutionaries. How did that happen?
Well, pure chance. I got involved in Cuba in supporting Castro. And this was before we knew really where Castro was coming from.
Are people who know your story surprised to discover that initially
quite often
you supported Fidel Castro?
That's correct. Yes, they certainly are. Because, once again, as I tell people, you had people like Herbert Matthews of the New York Times, et cetera. Everybody thought Castro was a social democrat, and we were all bamboozled, as were the Cuban people.
But you also once put on a hit list of Rafael Trujillo, the dictator of the Dominican Republic.
Well, that was by chance, too, but he was a very strange guy. I never met him, but he wanted to hit me because I had printed an article. It's totally irrational why he'd want to, because I just printed an article about the situation in Cuba where they're going to manufacture guns. So he wanted to hit, and he sent a hit team out that killed the chap that was in charge of this armory, and he decided to kill me too, but I was out of town, so.
Well, how involved did you get with Castro? Did
you
go to Cuba?
I'm sorry?
How involved did you get with...
I went down to Cuba before the revolution was over in 58, but to make a long story short, I didn't get back into the hills because I didn't understand the Latin manana concept, and I was running out of money, and I got tired. However, what came out of it was that I met people in the Associated Press Bureau down there, and so when I went back in 1960 and 61, I worked for the AP.
And that's how you got started as a journalist and
a
publisher. You were also followed by the FBI.
Yeah, well, the FBI's always followed me. What can I say? I mean, they were on my case. Not only they were accusing me of leading an invasion of college students of Cuba, which was insane. And then, of course, they were on my case about claiming that I was recruiting mercenaries for Rhodesia, which was totally incorrect. So what can I say?
Well, the FBI was very involved with Cuba. Later we'll be talking to Mariel Hemingway, and her grandfather was followed by the FBI for many years simply because he had lived in Cuba.
Yeah.
And they saw
yeah.
some that made them suspicious.
Yeah.
The first thing you published was an English translation of 150 Questions for a Gorilla written by Alberto Bayo. He was also a leftist.
Well, this guy was a fascinating guy because I would say somebody that has really never received the exposure, the credit that he should have for having been directly successful for the success of the Cuban Revolution, because he was a Spanish loyalist that had fled Franco. He went to Mexico, subsequently linked up with Castro, and he trained
and
Castro.
And Che Guevara.
Yeah, and Che and Raul and the initial 83 men that invaded Cuba on the 6th of December, 1956. And they had 6 months of training. Well, you take any peasant, you give them to me for 6 months, and I can turn them into a relatively competent soldier. So these people, as contrasted a lot of other revolutionaries in years past, they were well-trained and they were able to exist and carry out the revolution from the Sierra Maestra.
So he laid out the blueprint for how to train somebody to become a guerrilla?
I'm sorry?
He laid out a blueprint
yeah,
for training people?
Yeah, it was pretty
people?
Primitive, but it served as a basic basic text, if you will, for guerrilla warfare.
So here you are, you're publishing, but then in 67 you returned to active duty and was sent to Vietnam.
Yes.
That was by choice. You were not drafted.
I did. Yeah, that's correct.
What were you doing there?
Well, I was an intelligence officer for 6 months. I'd gotten a lot of trouble in the Army. And as I said in the book, I'm probably the only individual that's been kicked out of special forces, not once, but twice.
What did you have to do to get kicked out once, well, let alone twice?
Well, the first time, when I went in the Army, they didn't update my security clearance. And then they found out I'd been involved with Castro, and they got all upset about that. So they kicked me out of special forces.
Well, you said to them, you know, I stopped supporting Castro. I changed my mind. When he became a communist.
You're expecting to deal with rational people, and that's where you're making a mistake. But anyhow, so I pulled some strings when I got to Vietnam, and I got into special forces. I had a special forces team. And then subsequently they found out that I was back in Special Forces when I shouldn't have been, and they kicked me out again.
You were also wounded, weren't you?
Yes, I was, yeah. You know, that was an example of the line between courage and stupidity is a very narrow one. And in retrospect, it was stupid.
What did you do? You just exposed yourself?
Well, we were under attack, and we were getting mortared, and we were getting rocketed in our camp, and we had some South Vietnamese artillerymen that were available, but we had no way to get the information. And I asked for volunteers to run the information over to the South Vietnamese artillerymen, and nobody volunteered. So I volunteered myself, and so I got hit, which is stupid.
I'm speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Robert K. Brown, who is U.S. Army retired. Co-author, written with the help of Van Spencer. He's written a book called I Am Soldier of Fortune, Dancing with Devils. And that's because you founded Soldier of Fortune magazine in 1975. When you say I Am Soldier of Fortune, are you pretty much the main force behind that
magazine?
Well,
let's be brutally candid. We're talking marketing. And I would be remiss to suggest that I am the best or the best known, et cetera. But I did start the magazine, and so we just decided it would be a good marketing title.
You didn't start the magazine?
Oh, no, we did, when we were starting it.
Where did you get the idea for it?
Well, you know, we kicked this around for a long period of time with some of my Vietnam buddies. And one of the big missions of Soldier of Fortune, especially back in the time when the Vietnam veteran was not getting recognition. And I maintained from the very beginning that whether you agreed about how we were fighting the war, whether we were supposed to be there or not, is insignificant when you consider that the blood that we shed over there was just as red as in Korea, World War II, or World War I. So Soldier of Fortune from the beginning, amongst other things, became a mouthpiece for Vietnam veterans.
And also got its fair share of controversy, first for publishing recruiting posters for what was then the Rhodesian Army in what is now Zimbabwe, for their war with Robert Mugabe's group, ZANU, and also Joshua Nkomo's group, ZAPU. People got upset about that?
Well, there was...
You were asking American vets to go and fight in Africa, weren't you?
We never asked them. We just said, hey, if you want to go... Here's how to do it. And that's why the FBI could never do anything because, as I said, you know, I printed them in the magazine, recruiting posters. But my response was the FBI says, hey, we're not recruiting. We're just making information available. So there's nothing the government could do about it.
But then you also published ads in your classified section for guns for hire. And there were lawsuits against you. And eventually you had to drop them.
Well, what can I say? Basically, from my perspective, and of course we all have our own perspectives, but it was a matter of trying the magazine. You know, when you look bottom line, when two people meet through the ads, they know each other for 6 months. Nothing illegal is discussed. And then finally they decide to commit an illegal act. How can you come back and blame me? That's like two people meeting in a bar, and 6 months later they decide to off a bank. How do you blame the bartender?
Well, since that time, there's been a huge growth internationally in private security firms. Do you think that companies like Blackwater are guns for hire, but on a corporate scale?
Well, they obviously serve a purpose. They served a purpose in Iraq and Afghanistan. Essentially filling in where we don't have enough troops.
But not always doing the job in a way that
everybody makes mistakes. I think, generally speaking, the contractors have a good job, and obviously the ones we hear about are the ones that don't do a good job.
Soldier of Fortune is approaching its 40th anniversary. How many readers do you have?
Well, that's hard to say. I would say roughly our paid circulation is something over 30,000, but we have a pass-on rate. In other words, Sergeant Smith will go down to the PX, he'll buy a copy of the magazine, and the whole platoon will read it. So our pass-on rate is very, very high.
And who do you think is reading your magazine? Are they all potential mercenaries?
Well, that's very hard to say. Certainly not. I remember when we first started the magazine, what comes to mind, we had one chap that ordered the magazine that was a 44-year-old high school principal in South Bend that had never been in the magazine. Well, he wasn't going to be a mercenary. He was interested in vicarious, perhaps. But then on the other hand, we've had a lot of people come back to me and said, hey, I joined the military because of reading about it in Soldier Fortune magazine.
Well, you also publish investigative work and provide extensive coverage of military issues, often before the mainstream media does. What are some of the issues that you think are underreported by the media?
Underreported?
Yes.
Well, I focus on the situation that we've been very involved in for a long period of time off and on, and that's the situation in Burma. We've been very strong supporters of an ethnic minority over there that has been oppressed by the Burmese government ever since 1947. And the Burmese government, a bunch of thugs. In fact, digressing just slightly...
Haven't they improved recently?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, they're just bamboozling the people. In other words, they come forth and saying, yes, we're trying to improve human rights and blah, blah, blah. But the military element continues to attack the ethnic minorities in eastern Burma.
You've also been one of the country's biggest advocates for veterans, POWs, MIAs. Still in the Vietnam War, do you think that there's still MIAs? I mean, there's still people, former soldiers from the Vietnam War who are living there?
There's no doubt in my mind that we left people behind. There's no doubt in my mind about that at all. And one of the most interesting aspects of the whole POW-MIA situation, which, as you said, we've followed for 20, 25 years, is that one of the stories we came up with was how the Russians took between 20 and 22 aircrew from the North Vietnamese up to Russia, interrogated them, enhanced the interrogation of the drugs, and then executed them.
We have very little time, but I want to address one other thing that you write about in your book, your efforts to help anti-government forces in Afghanistan during their conflict with the Soviets. Given the developments in that country since 9/11, do you have any second doubts about it? Weren't people like Osama bin Laden also supporting the efforts of the Mujahideen?
Well,
in fact, a lot of the people who fought the Soviets, not that the Soviets had done a good thing, haven't they turned out to be bad guys in their own right?
To be brutally candid, and this may not make me many friends, which, of course, as you can well imagine, I could care less about, but the Afghan people might have been better off having the Russians, the communists, continue to rule the country. At least they treated the women right. And this is a very sore point with me, the fact that...
You're back to supporting Castro after all these years.
Well, I've made some mistakes in my time.
But you're saying that you do have regrets after all. I suspect that there are a few other insurrections that you supported at the time that you wish you hadn't.
I'd have to think about that, but that wouldn't surprise me.
Meanwhile, the magazine continues to be a success?
I think so. It keeps me from... keeps a roof over my head and food in the mouth.
And this book, is this your attempt to explain why some of these controversies have arisen?
Well, the purpose of the book is simply to document what we have done and give some insights into some issues that we've felt very strongly about.
Issues like?
Well, once again, the justification of the Vietnam War.
And, you still think the Vietnam War was a good idea?
Yeah. Yeah,
you realize you're in a serious minority there.
Well, I realize that and have been and probably always will be, but I was very supportive. I think we just went about it the wrong way.
Are you concerned as much as others are about the whole issue of PTSDs?
Very much so, yes. I've known some people that have suffered it, and I have not that there's much I can do about it, but I have definite concern.
Well, the real concern is that the military isn't doing enough to help these returning vets.
I read an article just recently that so 2 weeks it takes to get somebody in, and the VA really needs to get their act together and get people treated more quickly.
Well, we heard a lot about homeless Vietnam vets and Vietnam vets who suddenly would act out, and nobody said it was PTSD, but now it's apparent that PTSD has been a problem with every war. And we're finally, do you think that we have yet worked the thing out for the Vietnam vets?
Well, I think that we've made inroads. I certainly would suggest we haven't solved all the problems, though.
Lieutenant Colonel Robert K. Brown's book, written with Van Spencer, is I Am Soldier of Fortune, Dancing with Devils. It is published by Casemate. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Hey, my pleasure.